Hey guys, thanks for checking out the Access Point podcast. Whether you stumbled upon us for the first time or you're a longtime listener, we thank you for coming and listening, and we hope you enjoy. Good morning. All right. I've already messed up on the announcements. That means I don't have any slip-ups during the sermon. But speaking of, you guys let me mess up last week. Nobody called me out on it. As I was saying it, I was like, AJ, you're so wrong. I called Rachel Rebecca like twice. I even had it on the slides, and that's why as I was reading the slides, I was like, AJ, that's wrong. And nobody called me out. Not even after, so I was like, man, I'm about to get it. The band was like, I'm not telling him. You're going to tell him? I'm not going to tell him he messed up. Most of the time, you guys jump all over it. You know, you had a typo in your slides. Yeah, I have typos all the time in my slides. That's what happens. But, you know, you guys, I guess I'm proud of you for not, you know, hurting my feelings. But I will say I'm sorry I didn't correct that last week. I had one of my slides that said Rebecca, and then two of them said Rebecca, and one said Rachel, and then I was like, man, maybe nobody's actually listening to me. I'm not sure. So, it was a smaller crowd last week, so that's okay. It wasn't as many people to get judged by. But it's okay. It's always a privilege to be up here, to be to share God's word. We are still in our series, The Unforgettables, the misspelled, non-existent word that I've turned into a series. For those of you who are like, there goes another mistake. That's not an actual word, AJ. I know. The red line on Microsoft Word tells me every time I do my sermons, okay? But it's okay. What we've done is gone back throughout this time, the Old Testament, going through various stories that you say, well, I've heard that story since I was a kid. I heard it in Sunday school. I heard it in VBS. But there's so many of these stories that hold a lot of truths for us today that when we just breeze through the story and get the narrative portion, we're like, it's a good story, but doesn't apply to me. But there's so many truths that lie underneath that we can learn a great deal from them. And last week, as I told you, today is part two of a particular story. We started the story of what I called younger Joseph. We talked about last week just simply the beginning stages of Joseph, who Joseph was as a young man. You remember he was a 17-year-old dreamer. He was a favored son because he was the firstborn son of Rachel, not Rebecca, as I said last week. And Rachel was Jacob's favorite wife. He had, you know, a few ladies, one other wife and two ladies that he also had children with. I know you guys are like, man, this is already getting crazy. Yes, quite the crazy story. Something that shouldn't be going on today. I'm not going to say it does or doesn't, but that was the case back then. He had 12 sons. Joseph was his favorite son because it was the firstborn son through Rachel. And then we saw that favoritism created animosity, created hatred with 10 other brothers. Benjamin was younger, but also through the same mom, there wasn't as much tension there. But the other 10 brothers, they were like, you know, we've got to do something about this dreamer. We've got to get rid of him. You know, he's our father's favorite. Yes, he's blood, but it doesn't matter. You know, this has got to end. And so we left off last week, you know, when they waffle with the idea, should we just kill him and tell our dad that wild animals got him? Should we just leave him here out in the wilderness and see if he has any good luck, find his way home? And then that's when Judah says, hey, let's sell him. They sell him off to a traveling group of Midianites who eventually sell him in Egypt. And that's where we left the story. So that was young Joseph. So we're going to go throughout the 17-year-old to nearly 40-year-old Joseph. So it's a huge span. So it's going to be like a four-hour sermon. So I hope you guys got plenty of coffee. No, I'm just playing. I like to scare you guys. But very, very quick, going through the later years of Joseph that we have in the book of Genesis. So as we saw the life, the structure, the favoritism, the easygoing life that Joseph had was changed in an instant when he was like, look, I'm going to go check on my brothers because my dad sent me to check on y'all. Remember, he was kind of a tattletale as a 17-year-old boy. And you're like, he's 17. He's almost old enough to vote. But yeah, he's still a tattletale. But that was his nature. He was a favorite son. That kind of happens when you're a favorite son, I guess. I wouldn't know. I've got an older brother. You know, he's daddy's favorite. Nah, I'm just messing with you guys. have no idea. But his everything was changed from being the favorite son to having these amazing dreams that he knew was from God that didn't go over so well with his brother, to now being sold off to these Midianites, who then sold him for high price to Pharaoh's captain, Potiphar. See, this guy named Potiphar, he was a very wealthy guy. One, he could afford to buy a young man such as Joseph. I mean, Joseph was a handsome young man, a strong young man. He was a capable man that he knew, I can put him to work. I can trust that he's going to do the heavy lifting. He's going to do the stuff that I don't want to do, and he'll look out for me. But see, also Potiphar was the man who led the king's executions. He was ordered by Pharaoh, the king at the time in Egypt, to carry out executions. He was in charge of it. So not only a wealthy man, but in many cases, a man with not much feeling, a man that does what he's told and, you know, forget the consequences because I'm just following orders. But even in that, even with his life being turned upside down, God was still with Joseph. And eventually, because of that, because of God's blessing on his life, the blessings that came about because Joseph said, God, I'm not turning my back on you. Remember, those things go hand in hand. Blessings and obedience are cohesive. There's not going to be blessing and disobedience. Those are polar opposites. They're like the north and south, you know, north and north punching together. They're gonna push each other away. That's just not how it works. But so many times we, unlike Joseph, we say, God, I don't always follow your directions. I don't always follow your will, but I still want you to bless me. No, Joseph knew in order to be blessed by God, to be used by God, to follow God's will, it required me actually being obedient to God, and he did that. And Potiphar began to realize, okay, there's something special about this man. There's something special about Joseph. He saw a work ethic that stood out. He realized that everything he touched increased. Everything he did was blessed. And so he said, look, I've got to do something about this young man. I need to make you higher up. I need to make you head of my household. And so even though life seemed dire, life seemed as if, you know, what else is there for a 17, now almost 18-year-old boy? What life is there because I'm now a slave? But then his slavery turned into more than just do what I tell you, but look, you're head of my household. You're now the one that I trust over everything. You are second only to me, and I trust that whatever I give you to do, you're going to take care of it. You're going to do it at the fullest extent. You're going to give 100%, and I know you're not going to mislead my trust. You're not going to take anything away. Potiphar saw that. He knew that if he put Joseph in charge of something, it didn't matter what it was, under his household, it would prosper. And he said, look, you've got control over everything but me and my wife. Everything else is yours. I trust you. That was the quick relationship that already began to shift. And Joseph was, well, I may not be home, but you know, things are going my way. God is still blessing me in this circumstance, in this situation, because he hadn't turned his back on God at all. But the story, as we read it, it's a time gap. But as you read the story, it's almost like, one day, everything's good. One day, he's in charge. And then the next day, it's like, ooh, betrayal of that trust. Well, it fell apart when Potiphar's lovely wife began to keep an eye on. Remember, he's a young, good-looking man. You know, just think of A.J. Layton, and that's Joseph out working the fields. And you're like, yeah, I mean, the temptation was there. I'm sorry. I had to do that one. But the temptation was there. She was a lady who got what she wanted. And she asked over and over and over for Joseph to sleep with her. Day in, day out, every opportunity as we see that she got, she would proposition him. I mean, can you imagine a young, maybe 18, at most 19-year-old man being propositioned for sex day in and day out with a beautiful lady who had a lot of power and, again, was not used to being told no. This was a lady who had power to get what she wanted, and in this case, she wanted Joseph. But that's not what Joseph knew. Joseph knew that's not the life he needed to pursue. He knew that he had been given trust over Potiphar's household, everything but his wife. I mean, can you imagine the intense temptation that he had day in and day out? I mean, not picking on you guys, but I know many would be like, okay, whatever you say, just you know, go along with it. Like, well, God, I tried, but that's as far as I can go is trying. No, you either do or you don't. There's no trying. You know, that's a quote from Mr. Steve Bowen right there. That's what he told his kids growing up. He said, you can't try it. You either do it or you don't. And I love that. So I use that. And that's Joseph. He said, look, I'm not going to try to fight this. I'm going to run from this. But she didn't like that. She, again, is not a lady used to being here to hear the words no or being turned down. And she decided, well, I'm going to do whatever it takes. Again, that's kind of the personality that she has. She asked him again one day when the household is empty, when really the other servants are out and about, and she says, well, here's my chance. And she comes up, grabs him, says, you know, come to bed with me, sleep with me. And he tells her again, look, I can't. This would be a betrayal of my master's trust in me. Remember, your husband gave me control of everything, and he explicitly said, but you. I'm not going to mislead that trust. I'm not going to sin against my master or my God. Remember, this isn't what I was brought here for, to take advantage of him or take advantage of you. But again, tired of being told no, she grabs him by his coat. And, you know, it wasn't the fancy coat of many colors, because his brothers used that as evidence that Joseph was dead. Remember, they put the blood of some cattle over top of him and over top of the coat and brought it to Jacob to mislead him. So it wasn't that, but still grabbed him by his coat and tries to literally drag him into the bedroom. But Joseph, in an act of pure self-control, remember, you guys went, okay. Whereas Joseph literally rips free from his coat and runs out naked with his coat in her hands. And this is literally, to me, the exact exemplification of 1 Corinthians 6:18 when it says, flee from sexual immorality. It should have said, like Joseph did. He literally ran from that sexual immorality. It didn't say he wasn't tempted, because you know he was tempted. You know he had to fight it time and time again. And he knew if he just gave in even a slight second and just saying, well, might as well this time since nobody's around, he would have given in. But no, he fled, literally ran away completely naked, away from that temptation, away from that sin. But again, Potiphar's wife, look, nobody tells me no, and nobody runs away from me. So she says, I've got his coat, I've got evidence, and there's nobody else to refute me. Plus, I'm Potiphar's wife. Who's going to tell me that I'm lying? So she puts up her plan. She says, look, this is what I'm going to do to destroy this young man. I had an infatuation for it, but now I despise with everything I have, and therefore, I'm gonna ruin him. And so after he runs out, she screams for other servants to come in, other staff, and she holds up the coat and says, you know that Hebrew boy that my husband bought and brought to this household and put in charge of my house? He just tried to force me to have sex with him. Can you believe that? And Joseph's the only one that can say, that's not what I did at all. In fact, I remember the story quite opposite of that. But it's just her word against his, and because she's a powerful lady, because she's Potiphar's wife, we know whose side they're going to take. And they say, well, we'll go find them. Yeah, we'll take care of this. And then, of course, when Potiphar comes home, she tells the story again to him. She continues to tell it over and over until it's the gospel truth. That is exactly what happened. He's now betrayed his trust. He's no longer in charge of his household. In fact, now Potiphar says, well, I have no choice but to throw you in jail. I have to believe my wife. She's got your coat, buddy. I mean, what else am I going to do? And so Joseph had to pay the price of impeccable integrity to live up to the cost of a sin, a heinous sin, heinous crime, for something that he literally fled from. He literally stayed as far away as possible. But even in the midst of so-called blessings, now looks like a curse comes on Joseph's life. And most of us would have said, well, God, I see what you've done now. Thanks a lot. I thought I had it going my way. First, you let me be sold. After my brothers hated me, I can't live in a house that everybody hated me. Then you gave me a little bit of hope saying I'm in charge of Potiphar's house. And now you get me in trouble for being innocent. God, thanks a lot for bringing that in my life. But instead of doing that, instead of saying, well, fine then, God, see what I do for you from here on out, he teaches us that standing up for what's right brings a whole lot more blessing than folding under the pressure of going with the flow, of simply saying, okay, it won't be too bad this one time as long as we don't make it a habit. That's a good excuse for us Christians. As long as it doesn't come an addiction or become a habit, it's okay. I can gamble without it, you know, taking over me. I can drink that without becoming an alcoholic. You know, I can do this or that. We excuse these one-steppers, but really what we're doing is we're just giving in, where Joseph's saying, look, stand up what's right. And that's when the blessings will come. That's when God will actually bless your life. It's not a prosperity gospel. It's the truth of what obedience brings into our lives. But again, Joseph, he's now found himself in another horrible situation. He's now in an Egyptian prison. He's already away from his family. But again, things weren't so bad. I'm now in charge of Potiphar's household. But now, because I'm innocent, because I did what's right, I find myself in prison. But soon, even God's blessing was there, because Joseph didn't turn his back on God in there. He didn't start blaming God. He didn't say, why, God, have you done this to me? Rather, he says, God, I'm going to trust you. God, I'm going to obey you. And just like Potiphar noticed, the prison guard noticed. And he's like, this guy's not going to run. This guy's not going to try to sweet talk his way out of here. He's not going to beat me up. He's not going to hurt the other prisoners. You know what? I can have it made easy. I let him be in charge. I can sneak out, you know, go hang out with my buddies. Joseph has got full reign of the prison. He's okay. I trust him. I mean, could you imagine, you know, a prison guard be like, you know what? I need a few minutes off. Hey, buddy, let me bring you out of your cell. You just make sure the guys behave. That's not going to go over too well. As soon as the prison guard is gone, he's like, I'm out. Good luck. Joseph, he's like, okay. He's a trustworthy man. They gave him free reign, knowing that, one, there was something unique and special about this because of his obedience to God. But they also, like Potiphar, noticed that everything he did, everything he said, seemed to carry a sense of power, authority, wisdom, and yes, even blessings. Something that they knew had to be supernatural. Remember, they didn't worship our God, didn't worship the God of the Israelites. But they still recognized that he did, and that there was something special there. But in this case, as he's got a little authority, as he's got free reign, he happens to come across two fellow prisoners who were actually servants straight to Pharaoh. So as he was a servant under Potiphar, these two men served directly to Pharaoh. One was a cupbearer, which literally would make sure the food wasn't poisonous, make sure the wine wasn't going to kill Pharaoh. So look, if anybody's going to die, it's going to be me, because I'm your cupbearer. I'm going to take on the punishment of this bad food, or I'm going to be the one taking the risk for you. So the cupbearer and the baker both find themselves in prison by not listening to Pharaoh, not doing what he's done, or, you know, we don't know the exact crime, but offending Pharaoh enough to put them in jail. One night, we don't know if it was the first night or when it was, but both of these men dream vivid dreams. And they, back then, as in some cases even today, these dreams carried great meaning. And they knew that because they remembered exactly what happened. They knew the detail that they remembered was important. It stood out to them. But because they were in prison, like, look, we can't go to these mediums. We can't go to these sorcerers to help us interpret their dreams. I mean, they trusted in these people who were otherworldly, supernatural type people to help them interpret those dreams, to help them understand, well, what does this even mean for me? What is the universe trying to tell me? And what these guys dreamed is, the cupbearer dreamed of these vines coming out, and then all of a sudden clusters of grapes appeared. It was three vines, then clusters, and then he stood before Pharaoh, and he squeezed the grapes into a cup and handed the juice to Pharaoh. And that was his dream. You're like, that's not very cool. Well, the baker also had an image with three things. This time, because he's a baker, he had three baskets on his head. The top one had pastries and other baked goods, and the birds were pecking at it, trying to eat all his goodies as he was carrying all three baskets on his head. Then he woke up. That was the dreams. And if you were like me, if I dreamed, I'd be like, that was crazy. Don't take NyQuil anymore. You know, whatever. I would have blamed it on something else. But they knew there was something unique and special about these dreams, but were upset. Look, there's nobody here. We're in prison of all places. And so I guess I've just got to live out my days wondering what it could mean, making up my own assumptions. But then Job says, look, give me a chance. Let me hear your dreams. I know you want to find out what they are. I know you want an interpretation. And Joseph does that. He gives them the interpretation of their dream. First, the cupbearer. He says, you're standing before Pharaoh. The three vines are actually 3 days that you will be released and you'll be back to your old job, standing before Pharaoh, handing him his cup of wine. And so he's like, well, that's awesome. The baker's like, well, cool. Well, my dream's kind of similar. I had 3 baskets and the birds were trying to eat away my food. He wasn't quite as happy about his interpretation. He says, your dream also had 3 items. Those 3 items were 3 days. In 3 days, when the cupbearer is released back to his old job, Pharaoh's going to kill you. And as the birds pick from the pastries, they're going to pick from your head. And you're like, whoa, gruesome. Yeah, very gruesome. But you can imagine, he's like, man, this guy's fake, man. Don't believe him, cupbearer. I would have been trying to fight it myself. I wouldn't really like that dream interpretation either. But in the midst of that, you know, knowing the baker, look, I'm sorry, buddy, but that's what's going to happen. That's the case. Joseph goes to the cupbearer. He says, look, because I gave you this interpretation, because I trust in God that it's going to happen, when you're with Pharaoh, remember me. Tell him, look, I'm innocent. Potiphar didn't actually catch me. It's just his wife's word versus mine. Please tell them so that I can be released, that I can be given a way out. He just knew that this was his way out. He just knew that he was going to be free in 3 days as the cupbearer was free. But as soon as the dreams became a reality, as soon as the cupbearer was back into his old position and the baker was literally killed and left on a stake, the cupbearer forgets all about Joseph. He forgets about him interpreting his dream. He forgets even about his dream. He's back where he wants to be, back to normal, life as he loved it. So why worry about some guy he met in prison? You know, that was behind me. That's no big deal. I'm trying to forget that I was even there. You know, I'm never going to mess up again, so it's not a worry for me. So Joseph, again, is stuck. He didn't know it at the time, but he had 2 more years to stay in jail for being an innocent man. But God was still with Joseph over those 2 years as he stayed in prison. And that's when I know most of us, me included, would have given up. And there's times in your life that you're like, God, I'm literally on the brink. I'm literally, if there's one more thing thrown my way, it's over between us. I'm blaming you. I'm blaming the world. I'm blaming everything because I've blamed everybody else around me, and I'm running out of names, so I'm coming to you, and I don't know what else to do, God. You know, when you're on that brink, and that's where I can imagine Joseph thought he was, in prison as an innocent man, nothing going his way, away from his family in a land he doesn't know. He couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. He thought he did through the cupbearer, but now that door was shut and he's left to suffer in prison for what he didn't know how long. It was 2 more years, but he didn't know that at the time. And see, the problem with most of us as Christians is that we assume that in these tough situations, well, God just left me. That's why times are tough. That's why I'm going through this difficult trial. That's why this thing that I never thought would happen to me is happening because God just left the room. God has left my life. God has turned his back. God has forsaken. Whatever words we use, we say, God can't be in the midst of this. Joseph could have said that. Why would God be in this prison with me? Why would God bless this? I'm trying to do my best, but God is gone. That's why I'm in prison. But what Scripture tells us through Joseph and time again is that God is most powerfully present in these tough situations. And I know many of you who are on the other side of that hump, on the other side of going through that valley, when you look back, you're like, man, I've never been as close to God as I was then. I've never felt God's presence as much as I did when life was at its worst, when everybody was saying, I would give up if I was you. When everybody was saying you should blame this or that or him or her, God was most present in my life in that time. And just like Joseph, throughout all the trials, through all the temptations, through all the fighting sin and fighting, you know, bad relationship with his brother, Joseph faced with and showed true integrity. He showed honesty, showed solid work ethics. And he kept his eyes on God, and he was obedient to God. He didn't say, God, I expect you to bless me despite what I do. He says, God, I know you will bless me because of my obedience to you. He knows it goes hand in hand. And so Joseph's true actions his actions in life, his actions as a son, his actions as a brother, now as a slave, then as a leader, and then as a prisoner, all showed true confidence in God in every stage that he was. And in all those stages, he was faithful to God, even when he could have easily said, you know, God wasn't being faithful to me. God had left my life. God was absent in this situation. He knew better, and he showed confidence in God for that true reality that he trusted in. But again, what we do, and what I'm guilty of too, I've done it, is we say, well, God, this is what you could have done in my life. This is how you could have blessed me. You didn't, but you could have. And so we get hung up on the what God could have done or what my life could be if. You know, just think, if you would have blessed me here, God, if you would have allowed me to get into this relationship, where I would be. If you would allow me to get in this school, what my career would be. If you would allow me to go to this city, the people, the friends, the future spouse I could have met. Just thank God, if you would have actually allowed me to do my thing, if you'd allowed me to live my life, just think what my life would be or what you could have done to bless me, God. But no, you didn't do that. And so now I've turned my back on you as you turn your back on me. And you know, and maybe it's just me that's guilty of doing the what could have been game, what my life, what my family, what my finances, what my faith would look like if God would have just come through as I prayed for him to, as I hoped for him to. But see, what we need to do is when we find ourselves in that situation where we have convinced ourselves that God doesn't care, it's easy to forget Scripture, forget the truth, forget what God is telling us, but we have to remember what he says, that he will never leave us or forsake us. Instead, we need to dwell on that, dwell on the reality that, God, I don't feel you right now. I don't feel your presence. I don't feel any sense of blessing. I don't feel anything in my life remotely close to godly, anything close to being blessed. And so, God, I'm tempted to turn. God, you said you'll never leave us. So at least give me something to make me feel you. Give me something in my life to make me understand this truth. Because I believe your scripture is true. So help me see that presence in my life. Joseph knew that. Instead of saying, God, just think if I was back home with my dad, what I would be doing. Just think, maybe my relationship with my brothers would be better if you would have left me back home. Just think what my life could be if I was back with mom and dad and brothers and sisters. Just thank God. But no, you've now drugged me into an Egyptian prison. Thanks a lot, God. And see, unlike Joseph, we get stuck in the what God is not doing narrative. We treat God like a genie. When we need him, okay, God, this is what you should be doing, but since you didn't, I'm not coming back to church, or I'll find a church that tells me what I want to hear and says I'm going to be blessed no matter what, no matter my life. So I'll go to that one, or I'll follow enough to get a sense of peace in my life. But when things are good, you know, God, I don't need you, because last time I needed you, you weren't doing anything in my life. You didn't bless me. And we get stuck on this narrative of what could have been, or God, look what you're not doing in my life. I'm still not married, God. I still don't have kids, God. I still haven't graduated, God. I still don't have my finances right, God. I'm still battling this addiction, God, and you're not helping me a bit. And we treat him like a genie, as if these things are going to change overnight. And because they don't, then God is absent. We think that if we jump through enough religious hoops as a Christian, somehow he'll grant us whatever we want. If we just do enough, then our genie God will bless us. And again, unlike Joseph, we think the blessings come regardless of obedience, when Joseph is a fine example that the blessings come only because of obedience and faith in him. And Joseph knew that. Joseph continued to trust in God, never treating him as a genie and never questioning, God, what could my life be if you were actually at work? Because he knew God was at work. He didn't know how. He didn't know why he was using him this way, but he knew God was at work. And as we talked about last week, that providence, we may not see in the midst of it, but we look back and we saw God's hand at work in the most difficult times. We say, God, I thought you left me, but no, you were setting the stage for something even more amazing than I could have planned. And in fact, that's, as I said last week to our small crowd, that what is amazing about Access Point is that really the large majority of you now are people that God brought, that one, you've never been to Edenton. you move to and you say, I don't know why God brought me to Edenton to start. I'd never seen it on the map. I'd heard of the Outer Banks, but Edenton, why Edenton? And God brought you here. God brought you the access point, and God has used you in vital ways here. And you can, looking back, you say, God brought me here for a purpose, for a reason. And God has placed you and used you. And I can't say thank you enough to God and to you for his providence in those times where you say, God, thanks a lot for bringing me to Edenton too. God, thank you so much for bringing me to Edenton for these friends, for this church. And yes, you may even thank him for your pastor, even though he's goofy as all get out. But I'm thankful for you guys and God's providence in that, because I can see looking back how God brought me back to Edenton when I told God, I'm not coming to Edenton and I'm not going to be a preacher. And God's providence is like, just wait a little while and see what happens. And eventually I saw that. Joseph knew that. Joseph knew God was at work, and he trusted in God despite the circumstances, despite being a hated brother, despite being sold into slavery, despite being innocently proven guilty and thrown in prison and left in prison, even though he thought he had a way out. He still said, God, I'm trusting in you, and I'm trusting in your timing. Well, that timing came. 2 years later, the cupbearer finally, that dude in prison, remember, he told me my dream, he interpreted my dream. And the reason he remembers is because Pharaoh woke up in a cold sweat because of his troubling dreams. And he goes first to his standard people, his sorcerers, his mediums. He's like, all right, here's my dream. Tell me what it means. And all of them are like, sorry, Pharaoh, that's kind of trippy. I don't know what that dream means. But then the cupbearer's like, oh, Pharaoh, remember when you locked me up because I was bad? I'm not that person anymore, Pharaoh. Believe me, I will never do that. But remember when I was a bad dude? Yeah, you threw me in there. And I had a dream in prison. This guy in prison told me what was going to happen. He told me in 3 days I would be released and I would be your cupbearer again. And it happened. And he said that you were going to kill the baker, and he gone. So this guy in prison, I think he's still there. We can go get him. And Pharaoh's like, look, I don't get all of my, everybody else that I hired, my hired hands, that I don't know why I'm paying them. They're not doing their job. So he calls for Joseph. And Joseph's like, for real? I got to shave. I got to clean up. He cleans up. He gets some new clothes on, gets out of his prison garb with his number across the chest. I don't think they had that back then. But still, he cleans up to go in front of the most powerful man on the planet at this time. This was coming straight from prison, clean up to being in front of the most powerful man on earth. And that's where Joseph finds himself. And Pharaoh says, look, you've got this reputation as one who interprets dreams. And Joseph says, look, I don't do that. And Pharaoh's like, hold on, I just released you from prison, but you better do something. But then Joseph clarifies. He says, no, it's not me. It's God who interprets these dreams. So don't give me glory. Give glory to my God. So then he says, whatever. I don't care who's got the power, but just tell me what this means. And he retells his dreams to Joseph, giving him a chance to interpret them. And what it was is these dreams were it was two of them, very similar together. One was of seven healthy cows coming up out of the water, just beautiful cows, who were then eaten up by seven scrawny, hideous-looking cows. And, Pharaoh's like, I have no idea what that means. And then another dream of seven healthy heads of grain who were literally swallowed up and suffocated by these scrawny pieces of grain that really looked like they shouldn't have survived, even if they had all the water in the world to try to resuscitate them now. But yet, they took over the seven healthy ones. So the dreams were similar. And Joseph says, okay, this is what it means. God is actually giving you now a heads up of what's about to take place. And he says, those seven healthy cows and those seven healthy heads of grain, those are 7 years, seven beautiful years of bounty, of good harvest, of good food, when our economy is going to be doing great. But then those 7 years are going to be eaten up as the ugly cows and the hideous heads of grain did the healthy ones. It's going to be 7 years of famine in Egypt and also the surrounding areas. So God is giving you a warning in advance. He's telling you, look, if you don't prep, if you don't prepare yourself, if you don't do what's necessary, you, your land and surrounding lands are going to suffer. And what Joseph does, I mean, in front of the most powerful man on the planet, he says, look, what you need to do. He's telling Pharaoh what he should do. I'd have been like, okay, I don't know what to do now, Pharaoh. You're Pharaoh. But Joseph, he has confidence in God and in his interpretation. He says, look, because he gave you warning, these next 7 years, you need to store. You need to prep. You need to hoard. You need to do whatever it takes to prepare for the upcoming famine. Remember, 7 good years, you're going to think, oh, I can live and do as I want. But then there's going to be 7 bad years that everybody's going to come crawling to you looking for answers. So you need to prepare. And Pharaoh, as Potiphar and as the jailer, as the guard noticed, he says, there's something special about you. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. One, you interpreted my dream. That's pretty cool. But you've got a supernatural wisdom. You've got something that stands out about you. And so what I want to do is I want to make you a ruler. Straight out of prison, to the shower, to Pharaoh, to now second in command in Egypt. I mean, how awesome is that? You know, for those years in prison, he didn't see that providence at work. He didn't see how interpreting the cupbearer's dream as he thought would be an opening door experience, how he thought it would give him a way out. He didn't see that. But God's providence led that one interpretation to another interpretation with Pharaoh, who then put him in charge straight out of jail to second in command only to Pharaoh. I mean, how amazing is that? Joseph is now the one who oversees the lands. He's the one who preps. He's the one who stores. He's the one who organizes everything so that during these good 7 years, when the bad years come, they're going to be fine. People are going to come to them, and they'll be able to plenish them as well from out all the lands. And so God's providence was at work. And so after years of suffering, after years of struggle, God made Joseph one of the most influential people on the earth. His wisdom, planning, and God's perfect plan did end up saving many, many lives during that famine. And this is really when the plot kind of makes full circle, and we see that the famine is now not just brought itself to Egypt, but the surrounding lands in Canaan where the rest of Joseph's family was. It's now beginning to affect them. The 7 years of bounty are up. And now it's been 2 years, as we hear in Scripture, that the famine has started. And it's already running out of everybody else's supplies. They're like, look, I thought we prepared for tough times, but this is worse than we thought. This is something I can't prepare for. So what Jacob does, as we see, he was changed his name. God changed his name to Israel. He sends 10 of his sons to Egypt to buy grain. This is when even Joseph's dream becomes a reality, the dream from 20 years ago. And they actually come because he's second in command, because he's in charge of the grain. Their brothers come to Egypt. They actually meet their long lost brother, the brother they knew was dead. He was sold off, and to be sure, 20 years later, he's gone. And his brothers bow down to him. They respect him as basically Pharaoh to them, second in command, second most powerful man on the planet. But Joseph, instead of saying, guys, you don't recognize me, he begins to say, I need to keep this hidden for just a little while. And the reason being is because brother number 11 wasn't there. His true biological brother through Rachel, Benjamin, his younger brother, was not there. And he wanted them all together. And so he says, well, I need to hide my identity until they're all here. And so he decides to play as if he thinks they're spies. And he says, look, I know you're spies. You're trying to find our weak spot. So you're going into jail until I figure this out. And so 3 days, he leaves them in jail, but he decides to make a bargain with them. He says, look, you bring back that last brother. That'll verify your story. You said there was 12 of you, right? And the 11th is still home. And number 12, you say he's already gone. He's passed away. Okay, obviously you can't bring him, but bring this other brother you've promised me about. That will verify my story, your story. And in order to have collateral, you're going to have to leave a brother here. You're going to have to leave Simeon. Leave him in prison until you come back. That's to assure that you actually come back to me. The famine will assure it, but now this is added guarantee, added collateral that the brothers will come back. And they go back, and you imagine, remember, Jacob was already distressed from 20 years and still suffering from the loss of his favorite son. But then his second son through Rachel was now really refer to him as his favorite son. And they're saying, look, we need to take Benjamin back. No, you've already taken Joseph. How are you going to take Benjamin from me? How could you allow that? How could you do that to me? You know, all the leftover gray hairs are just going to fall out because you're continually stressing me out. You're continually worrying me. But eventually they say, look, we're out of food. We're out of money. We need to do something. So they gather again with Benjamin, go back to Egypt, and Joseph invites them in for a huge feast. And they're like, oh, man, this is it. He's gonna kill us right here in his house. He's going to take care of while we're all in here together. And they scare them, thinking we've finally been set up. And they actually say, Reuben says, look, remember when I told you not to mess with Joseph? Now we're being punished by God, not knowing they were actually being punished by Joseph himself. He says, you guys have done this, and now God is cursing us, and now this is what we've got to pay for. So not only is our dad going to lose Benjamin, he's going to lose all of us because of y'all's stupidity. He's already blaming it on the other brothers. But after a lot of questioning, after a lot of actually checking in on his father, he's saying, so your father's still alive? And they're like, yeah, do we have to bring him too? They're already, you know, trying to figure out what's the game plan here. What is Joseph trying to come at here? He finally, after a lot of questions, after seeing his favorite brother, his true biological brother, same mom and dad, he turns away and scripture says he cried and hides himself. Then in a fit of emotion, he says, everybody get out except his brothers. All the servants, all the other people, look, get out of here. And weeping in front of his brothers, he said, look, it's me, guys. It's your brother, Joseph. The one, remember, you sold? And you know, they're like, oh, man, God is going to get us now. He's going to take us out. He's now second in command. We followed through on the prophecy. We bowed down to our brother that we hated. You know, we hated his guts. We hated everything he stood for. Now, do whatever it takes because he's got the power. He's got the authority. But then Joseph says, look, guys, you sold me, intended harm. You intended to get me off your hands to make a little bit of money. But God didn't intend it harm. God intended it for good. He intended for me to be used some 20 years later now to save my family, to save all of Egypt and all the surrounding lands. God used what you did, the bad things, the negative things, the stupid things you did. God was able to turn it to good. So all the things that happen in your life, you're like, you know, I didn't even do this, God, but it's cursed my life. He or she made the choice, and now I'm having to suffer for it. Or, yes, I made the choice, but it's been 20 years. God, how can you turn that issue, that relationship, those bad choices into good, God? And like Joseph, it could be 20 years, could be more before you see his providence at work. But like Joseph, we have to realize that God's hand is still at work for his perfect plan. Not your perfect plan, treating him as a genie, but saying, God, I don't know how you can use this for good, but I'm trusting that you can. I'm trusting that it leads to your glory and to my blessing only because of my obedience and faith in you. And so Joseph is now with his family. He actually, because the famine is not completely up, he calls the rest of his family and says, look, there's 5 more years of this. This is only year 2. There's 5 more years. And so I want everybody, your cattle, all the sisters, all the aunts and uncles, I want everybody here in Egypt with me because I prepared. God gave me wisdom. God gave me understanding. God gave Pharaoh the dream to understand what's going to come. And so we've been ready for this. And I want you to be able to live through that, to survive this. And plus, I want to see dad again. It's been a long time. And so what we see in this entire story, yes, I know we've covered, you know, again, a 20-year span of the life of Joseph. But the overarching theme that we see is that God is with us no matter our life situation, no matter where we are at, no matter what's happened to us, no matter what we've done to others. You know, Joseph, again, he was a favorite son, a hated brother, a slave, a prisoner, then a guard over the other prisoners. Then he was a national leader. And in each phase of that, God was at work in Joseph's life. It took 20 years, but God was at work to bring about safety, security, bring about blessing for his family, for all of Egypt and the surrounding lands in Canaan. So it blessed people of God and people that didn't even worship God, but God used Joseph to bless everybody in that known area of the world at that time. And most profoundly, Joseph's story gives us an amazing insight on how God's sovereignty works to overcome evil and bring about his plan. Remember what I said last week? no matter how much evil, no matter how many bad choices we or others make, nothing can thwart God's ultimate plan to bring about good. It may not bring good in our life if we're being disobedient and turn our back on Him, but there's going to be ultimate good because God's plan will always come about. But you say, well, I want to be a part of that. Then we become a part of that plan by obeying God, saying, well, there's things I need to change. Well, then change them. If you want to see God's blessing, stop saying, well, God's not doing something in my life. If you want to see God do something in your life, it requires obedience. It requires faith. Stop blaming God when the truth is, I'm the only one to blame. So when there's no blessing or when God feels absent, I know who's to blame. It's me. It's not God. God's never left me or forsaken me, even in my darkest moment, even in the midst of, I know I'm doing wrong. I know I'm sinning. I know I'm disappointing God. And I say, I'll just say I'm sorry later on and maybe we'll get straight. Even in that, God didn't turn His back. But when I say, God, I'm tired of disobeying because one, I'm going against You. But two, I'm missing out on a lot. I'm missing out on Your blessings. God, I want to be in on that. I want to see those blessings. And that requires faith and obedience as Joseph did. He didn't turn his back. He didn't say, just think what You could have done in my life, God. Instead, he said, this is what's happening, God, and I'm going to let You use it as You see fit. I'm going to let You bring good out of this evil, and I'm going to trust in You to do that very thing. So let's do the same thing, trusting God to use whatever situation we're in to bring about His glory and our possible good through obedience in Him. Let's pray. Hey guys, it's AJ Layton, lead pastor at Access Point Church. We're so glad you guys have found us, stumbled upon us, or been long listeners. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our page, share with your friends. We look forward to seeing you next week.